I'm Baruch Elazar from Central Asian Development Institute. Thank you very much for the presentation. It was very interesting. Not smooth, but very interesting. And I would like to actually follow up on Batun's last closing remark about different countries and exposure to countries, to each other. So you actually portrayed nicely your relationships with foreign countries. So in terms of current dynamics, it's mostly like current dynamics with outside powers. But I'm more interested in internal dynamics. Actually, there are obviously taking into account the geopolitical situation of the entire Eurasian region and these particular countries, it's kind of obvious that two things should be improved, which is like trade and transportation in the region. And let me ask you a particular question. In your opinion, what do you think can be done in order to improve transport and trade situation among these countries? Thank you.
You ask a question for Daniel or for
all of you. And other fellows can do it.
So should we collect a couple more questions? So, sir, please. So we are in democracy. Who wants to reply to this question? Daniel, you are a former advisor, prime minister. So still ask.
Yeah, it's a very interesting question because the region, back in 20 years, 25 years, it was part of this was part of one country, and seemingly you would assume that there would be very close and well-built infrastructure, but surprise, that's not that doesn't exist. I mean, if you are in Bishkek and you want to go to Tashkent, I think. Sometimes the flight is cut off, and sometimes it's once a week. And if you want to go to Tajikistan, luckily we have like a couple of flights a week. But there is a problem with trade and customs because on objectively all of our partners are. Somehow, I can only speak on behalf of my country, and we are facing a huge dilemma. We have enormous potential for economic trade, inter-regional trade, but because of differences in political opinions and differences in political systems, the trade is not happening, and we need to search for outreach for the outside beyond the region because. For the time being, the cooperation has been non-existent, and in this regard, World Bank and the program Karet is a good example to establish a transport corridor between the former Central Asian and the Caucasus, and facilitate trade, ideas, exchange of people, and. I'm sure that in the coming decades we will close the gap of this absence of links between the countries, and we could generate and become really economic reactive center in the Eurasian continent.
Well, I just can briefly add to that the first all Central Asian countries, I could say about Kazakhstan, Uzbekistan, already have a national program of transport communication development. Last one, Uzbekistan, for instance, announced it is for several billions to improving internal communication as a first. The second is all Central Asian countries participating in different EU-initiated or ADB-initiated or CASA, Southern and other projects, which is improving communication between Central Asia, South Asia, including communication between Central Asia, Gulf countries, and of course, different, including the transport communication, particularly from China, Central Asia to Europe also. So, number project on the realization.
I think here China's investment in infrastructure really will practically not only allow the region to trade with China, but to trade amongst one another. So I think that's a big development that certainly will help.
So please, sir.
Okay. I'm Stanley Kober. One more organization that hasn't really been mentioned so far is the Shanghai Cooperation Organization. Recently, military exercises were conducted in Kyrgyzstan by several of the full members of Shanghai of the SCI. They're worried about the threat of the terrorism coming out of Afghanistan and Pakistan. And China's been mentioned. I'm looking at an excerpt from an article that appeared in the Chinese newspaper, the Global Times, in February. Quote, Uzbekistan, Tajikistan, and Turkmenistan are now in the crosshairs of Islamic State. They're not even talking about politics. Islamic State in Afghanistan. And so I invite you all to discuss this subject, which hasn't received so much attention. We've been talking about trade and economics. How do you deal with this emerging?
So,
I can take the question first and then help anyone wants to add. It's a great question, because this problem is not fully comprehended in the Central Asian countries. I think we do know that there is a threat from Afghanistan after the U.S. is limiting its contingency forces after 2014, but and with the rise of the ISIS. At the moment, the leadership in at least Tajikistan, in Kyrgyz Republic, in Turkmenistan, and even Uzbekistan at the moment are very aware of the threat, and they are doing military exercises within the CSIO and Shanghai Cooperation Organization. And at the moment, as far as I'm informed, Uzbek and Tajik governments are relocating their troops towards the borders of Afghanistan. And beyond that, we are trying to establish and tighten economic ties with Afghanistan to make trade, to build some infrastructure. Of course, we are servicing the contracts from the U.S. government, from Chinese are heavily investing in Afghanistan. And the only long-term solution, in my opinion, would be through building infrastructure and creating incentives for all the stakeholders in Afghanistan to participate in the economic development rather than just containing it, because it's in the long run is not very sustainable.
Yes, please, sir.
Yes, one of the, I think, similarities, especially with in the whole Stan region, Tajikistan and Kyrgyzstan, is a heavy reliance on actually remittances from overseas, for people who go and send money back home, and I think even Armenia, maybe more of the EU has affected him. My question is what do you think the downturn in the Russian economy has on that, and for stability of the governments in the region, and the same thing with Armenia, especially related to the downturn in the economic situation with the European Union, and is do you think there's a situation where a lot of the people who are very innovative, who have a lot of education, will not seek to either go to Moscow or the European Union to work, which it seems like that's what the future is for most of the human capital pool because of the low wages and economic situation.
He's always such a nice guy. Well, everywhere we go, my colleagues say Armenians are everywhere in America and Europe, and they're just everywhere. But if you look at the numbers, 95% of remittances come from Russia. I don't know how it works, how they add up the numbers. 95% of remittances, just think about it. And I'll give you another number. The whole volumes of remittances is equal to 15% of our GDP. And our GDP is comparatively modest to the US. It's roughly a little bit more than 10 billion. With a population of 3 million, so we discussed maybe 3.5 per person. So just think about it, how much your GDP actually depends, how much your growth depends on those remittances. Now, these numbers were as of last year. After the sanctions on Russia, these numbers went down. And they went down even more when the Russian ruble lost, I would say, about 40% of its purchasing power. So that was devastating. It was mostly devastating for those who actually had to go to Russia for their minimum earnings. The better qualified people, usually they go for Europe and United States, but those who have to actually literally sustain their families, the market is Russia, on the trade or construction or you name it. And then, yes, you are right, this was a very devastating result on the Armenian economy, on the families who are highly dependent on this money. And I don't even know how the situation will develop in the future with these sanctions on Russia. The Russian economy will continue to exacerbate, and then obviously it will have a domino effect on other countries, and particularly on Armenia.
My name is Abdul, I'm from Tajikistan, and in our country remittance is also a major issue. Similar to Armenia, it makes up about 50% of GDP, if you compare it, so about $4 billion. So the situation in Russia has certainly hurt us. The volume, not only the volume of remittances has declined, but their value has declined as well since Russian currency has depreciated. So if the question is there a problem? Absolutely. How to solve it? I think in the short run, you just do crisis management, most likely to get some. So you're likely to see some swaps with China, for example. I think the countries in our region will follow the strategy of Russia. In Tajikistan, at the moment, there are a lot of discussion about swaps to get some hard currency from China so that some pressure on Somali can be managed. You could see, again, internal swaps there's too much dollarization in the country. 70% of all deposits are in US dollars, and roughly similar volume of credits. So the depreciation of local currency against the dollar makes life much more difficult for all the businesses who have borrowed in dollars. And therefore, you might see more swaps internally where the central bank will provide local currency to the bank so that they can credit in local currency and so that they can have their dollars back in a year's time at a predefined value. So this is in the short run. It's not going to fix the situation, but it will win some time to make some structural changes for the long run. And the structural change would of course be to diversify the economies, to make sure that you actually are not so much dependent on a single source of hard cash. In Tajikistan's case, there are three main sources: remittances, aluminium, and cotton. Hopefully this will be a lesson for us, which in the long run will push us to diversify towards other commodities and services and so basically, yeah, in the long run the answer is certainly a structural reform.
If I may, just symbolically, we all probably migrants from different generations, but still the America itself, the nation of migrants. The issue is, if you will see Russian Federal Migration Service report in January 2015, the number of migrants from Central Asia almost the same. It's around 5 million people, majority from Uzbekistan, but the quality is not changing. But the problem is nowadays in all Central Asia countries, they implemented the program of three language in the education system, starting from kindergarten and English university. The idea behind it is, we all understand our globalizing world is labor market getting more and more competitive. In this regards, to work in good place, you need to have several foreign languages. So the migration will be a natural process, whatever situation. But the matter for Central Asians is in what particular labor market they will be. So priority in coming 10 or maybe years will be support more educated young generation so they could work in Google, Microsoft, I don't know, Chinese company and so on and so forth. Mm-hmm.
Yes, the situation with the ruble depreciation affected Kyrgyz Republic a little bit differently, because if you look at the World Bank studies, the most of the remittances coming from Russia are in a larger quantity, and larger the amount of money sent back to Kyrgyz Republic is larger than the normal laborer would send. It means that most of our coming back is from the salt textile products that we sell in Russia and get back the money back to Kyrgyz Republic. So in this respect, that situation really hurt our textile industry. And for instance, before, if Kyrgyz Republic was making around $1 billion per year on textile industry, these days, because of the ruble, our products are becoming less competitive, because now Russian customers are ordering from the Vietnamese inside Moscow, like near around Moscow and some other bigger state, bigger cities, and they have like underground, sometimes semi-illegal plants where a lot of people from Southeast Asia, they come over and they implement their order. Whereas the Kyrgyz textile products are been suffering right now with this.